Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 11 of season 5. This one is called Hero Worship. It was directed by Patrick Stewart. Teleplay goes to Joe Manosky. Story goes to Hillary Batter. It aired back on January 27th, 1992. In this one, the Enterprise is sent to investigate the disappearance of a science vessel outside a large black cluster. They encounter a ship adrift just outside the cluster with apparent heavy battle damage, and inside they discover a young boy named Timothy, who they rescue, and he eventually starts acting like Data. Clay is here to talk about this one with me, so right after this break, me and Clay are going to go deep on hero worship.
Timothy, your head movements are counterproductive. Can you be still?
Could you do it?
The servo mechanisms in my neck are designed to approximate human movements. I did not realize the effect was so distracting.
I like it. Data, are there any other androids in Starfleet?
No. I am the only one.
How come you're not captain?
My service record does not yet warrant such a position.
Data? What's the scariest thing that ever happened to you?
Fear is not a quality that I possess.
Because it's an emotion.
Correct.
But what if you had a nightmare?
I have never had a nightmare. I do not require sleep. Timothy, are you having disturbing dreams?
I do not require sleep.
It might sound like I'm sort of beating a dead horse or just beating the same drum for all of these episodes that have come along, but really one of the things I think, Clay, that I've noticed about Star Trek The Next Generation that I never really noticed before this rewatch is how much of a formula the show sometimes feels like it's stuck under.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is that it's largely at this point, the show tends to pair a character-based A story with a sci-fi B story.
Right.
And I never really noticed I think it's because the standout episodes of the show don't really follow that all the time.
Mm.
That you notice it when you start to just come across these sort of middling episodes.
This episode is not anything if not middling.
Yeah, this is a very middling episode. We're in kind of a stretch of middling episodes in season 5, but we're going to talk about Hero Worship, which is basically to a T what I just described. You have a character-based story focused on Data coupled with a sci-fi plot about being stuck in some kind of space hell hole or whatever is going on there. This is another Data episode where Data probes the depths of humanity, I think. I'll start off by saying I really like the first one or two acts of this one, and I think it quickly sort of falls apart after that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't collapse under its own weight, but it's certainly not a fantastic episode by any stretch. What'd you think?
I don't know if it's just kids on Star Trek or what, but I didn't really care for this at all. I thought this was incredibly boring. Mm-hmm. There was one or two moments of, you know, Data being Data, what was kind of interesting. Where, but overall, I don't know. I didn't really care. I don't even remember what happened at the end of this episode. I don't know what the black hole thing ended up being. I don't know how they fixed it. Oh wait, no, I do. Yes, just it came back to me now. But still, I don't.
They turned it off. They restarted everything.
Yeah. I don't know. It was just.
Why did they go into that place in the first place? I couldn't figure that out. Why did they go into that dangerous area at all? After they found the ship, they seemed to go farther into it for some reason. Was that clear to you? I didn't understand what their motivation was for going so far in where it was dangerous at that point.
Well, they had already turned on to the lane, and it's a really long way before there's another exit, so they just had to keep going until they saw another toll booth that they could get off at.
It's like driving across the Everglades in Florida. It's like one exit every 50 miles
or
something. It's
like accidentally getting onto the Mass Pike, and then all of a sudden you're in the next state.
Yeah. When we have to go very far down the pike, and it's like the distance between exit 1 and 2 is this is like Massachusetts distance, so maybe some people will laugh at it, but something like 35 miles between the exits, so if you miss it, you're just stuck on the highway.
No, I was Caitlin and I were driving to a party at Cordy's house one night, and I took the wrong turn, and I ended up on the Mass Pike, and we went from being like 5 to 10 minutes late to 2 hours late, because it was like it was seriously like being stuck in some sort of hellhole, because there was nowhere to get off the road.
Yep.
I've never been so mad in my whole life.
It's so because every second you spend, you're doubling the amount of time. It's like a time travel episode. Like every minute you go in one direction, you're doubling your time to get there, which is very frustrating.
Right.
Fascinating. But I mean, hero worship, I don't know if I can tie that back into the sci-fi plot of that, but...
our car was flying at the time.
So there you were angrily saying to raise the shields and something, and Kayla was just saying...
Okay, I forgot. That's my favorite part of this episode. The sequence when they meet... Oh, sorry. Damn it. I watch these episodes back to back and they get mixed up in my head.
I'll talk
about this in the next episode.
Okay, yeah, but we'll talk about hero worship here.
That's how little I cared for this episode. I don't even know what happened. I just know there was a kid and he had like some space age Lincoln logs and some sweet shoulder pads in his green onesie.
Yeah, I actually liked that model of the temple. I was like, I kind of wish I had that thing where I could stack up and play. I guess how I'll start it is that I like the first 1 and 2 acts mostly because I think this is one of the episodes that I preferred the character story over how they had to shove the sci-fi plot into it.
Yeah.
And I would have been okay. It's like, it's one of those things. I know what they why they had to do this or why they felt they had to do it, because you watch the teaser for this one and it makes it look like it's a humdinger of a mystery. You know, like this kid is responsible for what happened to that ship and the crew is totally unaware of how that happened, which is such a minor plot point in this episode that it really doesn't even matter. Like the teaser is not accurately portraying what's going on. Mm-hmm. It would just be hard to sell this episode as Data meets a kid who is psychologically damaged to the point where he wants to feel like an android and not feel anything at all.
Yeah.
Which I think is the more interesting storyline, but they kind of give up on it after about 2 acts.
Yeah, you could have gone really weird and dark with that story, but obviously they didn't choose to do that.
No.
But,
no.
I there was one part where they ask or this issue comes up to the, you know, the council or whatever you would call their round table of people.
Yep.
And it's either Troy or Crusher who says, well, I would just encourage it and try to make him the best android that you can.
That felt weird.
In my head, after he was like, okay, I understand what you mean. I was hoping the next scene was going to be like him having torn the kid in half and was like plugging servos up into his stomach.
I was actually thinking the same thing, which is hilarious. I was thinking, what if they had cleverly tied this into a time travel episode where this is how the Borg were created, where Data just turned him into a cybernetic creature and somehow sent him back in time and he became the Borg. That is not what happens.
Or I wish he had a line where he's like, are you sure you want me to do that? The last time I did that, it didn't turn out too well.
Yeah, I'm not the best at building androids, apparently. It's, I thought that the Troy sort of going along with make him be an android felt really weird. I felt like all the therapy stuff that was going on here was really just driving the plot of what was going on as opposed to making sense. Because I don't know. That feels weird to me that you're like, this kid has undergone a traumatic event. No one on the crew particularly seems interested in, even though he's clearly lying about what's gone on. Small sub note, this is the first mention of the Breen, I think, which is kind of interesting. The Breen will go on to be a bigger thing. But no one really calls him out on it. And then they just like, yeah, let's continue emotionally manipulating him. I don't know if it's ethical what Data is doing. I don't know any of that. It feels like they just came up with the idea, this kid wants to be an android. Let's have a couple scenes where he dresses like Data. Data combs his hair in a very ASMR type shot and things like that. Did you like anything about the Data storyline here?
My favorite thing was getting to see that he's moved past painting the birth canal.
Yes.
in his paintings.
He was done with that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's moving on to more realistic landscapes, which is nice. I don't know. I think if you were to pitch me this idea, I would probably be more on board with it than their execution of it.
I think I agree with that.
Yeah, just because it has the potential to be kind of weird and kind of interesting. And, you know, why... I wish they spent more time with it or something, because it's like, well, why would a person want to be more like an android, and then you've got your android who's trying to be like a person? So it's an interesting clash, but it's like...
I think they sum it up nicely in the scene where they're having those drinks. You know, that's a well-written scene explaining. Like, Data's like, I'd give a lot just to be able to tell if I liked this.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah.
And the kid's point of view is, I wouldn't have to feel bad about my parents dying, which is a totally logical, you know, next step.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it would have been more interesting if they really committed to it and had this character who wanted to be an android to the point where he's put in a situation where he has to make a very android type decision.
Yep.
And whether or not he can do it, you know, like without being influenced, you know what I mean? Like something like that. But I don't know if that was the point of what they were, but that kind of stuff would be more interesting to me than, you know, watch how fast I can build this model. And
yeah,
now I've combed your hair back and now you, I don't know. Now it's like twins.
Yeah. Now you're right. It's a bad version of twins, or a good version, I guess, depending on your point of view. I think I agree. I think the show's stuck in a point where they don't want to make give an opinion about whether or not it's better to be one way or the other, which I think is tough, because you could go either way. I think if you picked one of the characters to have a slightly sadder perspective, it might have worked a little bit better, because as it comes out, they both come out kind of even Steven in the end. Like, nothing, if you had instead shown the sadness of Data's point of view, even though Data doesn't feel sad, or if you had gone with the tragedy of the kid feeling these emotions and it would be better to be like Data, they don't really go one way or the other, because it gets smothered by the sci-fi story at the very end. So it's the show brings up this sort of point of view and doesn't really want to go anywhere with it, which I think is a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you necessarily need to make a firm make a hard-nosed stance on whether or not it's better to be an android or not, but I see what you're saying. I don't know. Putting the question out there is usually more interesting for me than whatever answer they might give.
Yep.
Because, you know, I don't know. That's not a question that can be answered for everybody by one answer, you know?
Yep. No.
I know sometimes I wish I was an android.
I guess you could see both ways. But, I mean, Data's... I always have a sort of a hard time, because they never really show the downside of Data outside of he makes social faux pas. You know what I mean? Like, I could see the show making a very strong argument for the way he goes, because they do this with the Vulcans. You know, this is the point of the Vulcans.
Right.
Like, there's a way to get past all this emotion so that you can come to a completely logical thing. It's not particularly human, but it almost feels like Star Trek is saying this is the way forward. Kind of. And I don't know if that's a Roddenberry influence or if it's just something that kind of built up over time, but you never see, at least the Vulcans have a downside where they have all this like pent up emotion that gives them problems in some spaces. Data is really just like, I don't get this reference. That's the downside of being an android.
Yeah, they seem to do it excuse me, they seem to do it better as the series went on, but yeah, it seems like the default, you know, if we don't know what to do for Data in a scene, just have him not understand a colloquialism or something.
Right. They kind of went past it with what we thought we enjoyed, but it could have been a whole episode, you know, where he gets command of the ship and redemption.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they even ask him, I mean, the kid asks him in this episode why he's not a captain.
It does, yeah. I thought that was funny.
And, you know, he gives him a very clinical answer and doesn't just say racism.
Hashtag Android Lives Matter. Yeah, he doesn't, he's not torn up about it, obviously. Although he says that he doesn't have the necessary experience, when in the other episode he said he's been in Starfleet for 26 years, which feels much longer than a lot of other people have been in.
Right. There. And it's, but, you know, that answer is, you know, it's the kind of answer you would give if you were given information in a very,
yep.
Like, he may believe that he has all of the qualifications to do it, but if he is given the I don't want to say command, but if he is told that you are not qualified yet, then I'm sure he'll be like, okay, well, my higher up says I'm not qualified, therefore I am not qualified, you know.
Yeah,
something like that.
I think that's 100% true. On a technical level, this was the second episode directed by Patrick Stewart, who gets another Data episode after In Theory, which was the Data Falls in Love episode.
Yeah, I get the feeling he must really like the character of Data or something.
Yeah, in the behind the scenes it was funny. He's sort of talking about it. He's like, oh, you know, you just get, he was talking about In Theory, but he's like, you know, the directors just go to get their names thrown in a hat and they kind of make assignments based on how the episodes come out. They just kind of pull out a director and that's how you get it.
Oh.
And he's like, oh, and that's how I got this. The fact that he got two in a row makes me feel that there's a little bit more politics at work here, because he mentioned that he really likes the Data episodes. So I feel that they were probably inclined to give the star of the show his choice of episode.
Are you implying that they're not giving preferential treatment to the star of the show, but then telling him that he's just like one of the guys?
Yeah, that's... And
how dare you?
He's
Gene Roddenberry would be rolling in his grave.
They're not telling Patrick Stewart to whatever that weird story was where the guy made him meet him for lunch and told him to fuck off or whatever. And Patrick Stewart said that didn't happen. I don't think that's what was happening at this point in the series. One thing on a technical, so Patrick Stewart directed this. I thought this was a really weakly directed episode, which I didn't notice in theory, but there's a ton of close-ups in this show.
Yeah, it's there's some weird shots in it too. Like there's the one shot that really stood out to me, I think, because if they've ever used it before, it's very, very rarely, was this over the shoulder of Worf shot where you get like an elongated look at the front of the bridge.
Yeah, yep.
And it really shows you how there's nothing there.
Yes.
It's you see Worf's head is huge in the frame. And then you've got like the control panel in the mid ground, and then the screen in the background. But it's like it feels like it's really far away. I don't know if it's, and there's nothing around it. It's just like a floor,
right?
With the control panel. I don't know if it was the lens they used or what, but that was a weird shot.
Well, it's kind of like being, if you're the helmsman, you never really think about this, but it's kind of like being in the front row of a movie theater. Like
that's true.
You need some space there, but that space in between them feels. It feels like you should put, like, a potted plant or something there to, like, take up some space. It's so dull and weird looking.
Like a koi pond or something?
Yes, like a little Zen garden where they can rake sand. I noticed that shot. I noticed there was one where the Geordi scene where Geordi talks about being, like, burnt alive.
Yeah. That was weird.
There's a shot where Geordi walks and the tracking is fine. He turns around and, like, leans against the warp core. They do another shot that shows Data following him, and it feels so unnecessary of a shot. Like, I don't understand why they included that. It feels very amateurish, which I was surprised by.
And I also, in that same scene when he's giving that speech, they do that, like, Steven Spielberg push-in.
Yes.
While he's talking, but it's, like, really oddly timed. And it's not really, like, that's not really a move they do on that show.
No, it's not. Yeah.
And that seems like it's the sort of decision of, oh, well, this is a really emotional moment. This is where you push in on your character kind of thing. Like, I've seen this in other things.
Yeah, it feels, you know, I'm no great auteur or anything, but it feels like it's, you know, the close-up is like the basic thing of if you're trying to get like an emotional point across, you want to shoot the characters in close-up because it gives you sort of a link to them or whatever. It feels like he overdid it. In this one, because there's so many just close-up shots that I don't think are totally necessary, and the Geordi story was just kind of weird. it's, I understand why they put it in, but it just feels weird that Geordi was in a fire.
Does it feel weird or does it feel right? What feels weird is that he was saved from that fire.
Yeah, through means that aren't exactly clear. I wish they had fleshed out his story. I need to see that episode, Geordi Gets Caught in the Fire episode, because he mentions it was before his.
I think that's most of Murphy's fan fiction.
He mentions it was before he got his visor, and all I could think about was the scene from Ray where the kid he burns his hand on the stove, and his mother. It's the first time his mother doesn't help him when he's calling out for his mother in the Ray Charles biopic. And that's what it kind of reminded me of, but. It was a weird sort of storyline. Anyway, let's talk about the kid Timothy. I thought that his storyline, I'm sorry for people who get tired of hearing this, but this is a total disaster of an episode for Troy in the way that she can't tell what this sort of 10-year-old is lying about.
Yeah.
Which is a mess. She claims it's because he's so traumatized that she can't read him properly or whatever.
Right.
I thought that was silly. The fact that the kid thinks he's guilty because he pushed a button, well, it kind of makes sense, also seems really stupid on a certain level.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I almost was kind of hoping that it actually was what he thought happened was actually what happened. Because that would at least have been more interesting. Where,
right.
I don't know what kind of ship they're flying. Where if you lean on the wrong button, the ship explodes. But
and they point that out very gently, being like everything is key coded. Especially the blow the ship up button is under a heavy lock and key. It's at least a 6-digit PIN number to get past that baby. I felt like he was a weird mix of maybe this is way too nitpicky, but he might be too old for the kind of stuff that he was doing. I don't know. It felt just so anticlimactic at the very end. And especially the fact that he's not really helpful when he's like, you know, the ship is under attack and Timothy's like, and you know, Picard goes, raise the shields. And Timothy goes, that's what they said. It feels like that sort of standard operating procedure that would not really give you any insight into what was going on that Data could use, but they throw it together at the end. I don't know.
Well, I think actually what might have helped it along is if you actually saw what he did or what he thought he did,
like in a flashback.
Yeah, or I don't know if they. I mean, I guess the opening, the cold open is finding him, so it's like, oh, it's a kid. But I don't know. So, something about knowing what he did going into it, I think might have made some of the android stuff work a little better, and I think it might have made the general story work a little bit better, because so like you're saying, the raise the shields thing is so innocuous that it doesn't scream danger to the definitely doesn't scream danger to the people doing it, but it doesn't really scream danger to the viewer either.
Right. Yeah.
So if you were to actually see the final minutes of this other ship and, you know, see what he thinks that he did wrong plus the chain of events that led up to the destruction of the ship, it might make that stuff have a little bit more weight, so you can see, oh shit, it's happening again, but nobody knows. You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
and you can understand right off the bat that this kid is psychologically damaged. Like, I feel like they played that too close to the vest. The fact that he was
guilty, he felt guilty about it.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about that change that felt like they should have been a little bit more upfront with the way that his mental state or something.
Yep. Yep.
So instead of spending a lot of the episode being like, what the hell is this kid doing? You can kind of be there with the character and be like, okay, I get this. He's trying to distance himself from these emotions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That way, I don't know. I think it might've been a little bit easier to connect to then.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, actually. I would have, like, a very mysterious – the cold open is a mysterious – you get a sort of half a look at what happened to the Vico. I think it's called the Vico.
Uh-huh.
That would be good. And I think you're right that they don't really – they don't make it plainly obvious that the kid feels guilty about what he's done. They make it more just seem he's sad that his parents have died, when his whole point is – he feels responsible for what happened on that ship, even though he's mistaken about what happened. And they don't touch on that, which is weird, until the very end, and it sort of just happens one after the other where all these things change. So I agree with that. I think they should have focused on why the kid was doing this and his sort of state of mind about, like, the logic of what he's doing. And it would have made the story more helpful, and it would have worked towards the ending where his knowledge might actually have been helpful, which it is, but not very obviously so.
Yeah.
It's tough, I guess. It's another case of these, the 45-minute episode, it's hard to get into the mind of a guest character.
Definitely, yeah.
So you either have to refocus the episode to make it more about Data, who we understand, or make it a really tight story about what happened to this kid.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to get into the B plot, but
yes, absolutely. The dark cluster or whatever it's called.
That whole B plot, everything they were saying sounded like alternate dialogue clips from other episodes or something, because it was like so bland and so generic and so. Make sure you check the positron glider over here, and Mr. Data, hit the buttons to the shields. It's just like, I don't know what they're talking about. They're literally staring into nothing.
It reminded me
trying to figure out nothing. It was really fucking boring.
It did feel like placeholder. It reminded me a lot of the episode where Picard pilots the shuttle for no particular reason because they're in a similarly dangerous zone of space. You remember that episode?
Mm-hmm.
That one, it feels very, very similar. They didn't have Picard pilot the shuttle, I assume because he was too busy directing the episode in this one. But it felt very same. It did feel like it's just placeholder science. You know, there's dark matter in space. We're hitting it. It's dangerous. It's shaking the ship.
Yeah.
Why don't we leave? Oh, it has the very convenient breakdown of navigation, which is immediately fixed the moment that danger has passed.
Right.
Which is always fascinating. I just thought it's a very bland thing.
Yeah, it's up there with I don't think I ever really noticed this until you pointed it out, but how boring these episodes are when they just hinge on some sort of countdown.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's the same kind of thing where it's like you've got a countdown to something that's kind of abstract and hard to relate to.
Yep.
And in these situations, you've got all of this abstract science that's very difficult to relate to, and there's not even a visual for you to grasp onto. It's not even like a giant worm or something that's trying to eat the ship.
Yep.
You know, it's like
shaking.
Yeah, it's like, well, if with dark matter, that's something that I heard once.
Right. It was previously bad.
It sounds dangerous.
Gotta stay away from
it. It's like space quicksand, I think. I don't really know what it does.
It reminds me of the Key and Peele sketch about the weathermen who are getting offended because the newscasters keep talking about the dangers of black ice. It's like, you got to watch out for that tricky black ice. You never see it coming. It's particularly prevalent in bad neighborhoods. It's a dark matter. I think I agree. It's just the countdown to imminent destruction is never very exciting. It's always solved by some sort of bullshit. Well, just invert the phaser array and it'll get us out of here.
Well, so one thing that I noticed that I thought was kind of interesting is the resolution. Well, actually, technically, the problem and the resolution of this episode are very similar to the problem and the resolution of the series finale. And because they're both this idea that, oh, well, what their actions that they're taking is what's causing the problem that is also destroying them.
Yep.
And, you know, they solve it the same way by just shutting the thing off. but in the series finale, you've got so much more invested in what's going on.
Right.
And it's... And even there, all they're doing is shooting a tachyon pulse, which God knows what the hell that is, into space.
Dark matter.
Yeah. there's like, not to jump way ahead, but there's even a scene in that episode where he's like, well, there's nothing there. I don't know. I'll just shoot something at it, see what happens.
Yeah, right.
And that's basically the way that this episode plays out. And it's just, you know, the fact that there's actually something at stake and you have more of a relation to what's going on and what the stakes are. It works much better there than it does here, which is just kind of like, I don't know. It's like it's like the space equivalent of trying to catch and kill a raccoon, but who's getting into your garbage by leaving out more food.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, all right, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah.
It made about as much sense as that metaphor that I just made.
Got a raccoon problem over there.
Do I ever? You have no idea.
The little kits. I'd assume they're called kits. Someone tell me if I'm wrong about baby raccoons, what they're named. But anyway, I think we're done with this episode. I don't really have a lot to say about it. It is a very middling thing. So me and Claire are going to come back. We're going to wrap up with our final thoughts about hero worship.
Timothy's a boy feeling a great deal of pain, but he is a boy again. Is this difficult for you, Dana?
Difficult.
To watch him moving away from being like you.
That would require an emotional context, which I cannot provide.
Hero worship. Another episode of season 5 here. We got a kid actor. We got a Data episode. The Data episodes, I think at this point, the show is starting to... Is the idea of a Data episode getting old?
I don't think in general. It's tough to tell because I'm not watching all of them.
Yep.
But it does seem like there has been a good deal of Data episodes that I've seen. So I don't know if those are the only ones or if those are, you know, a few among many that have been happening lately. But, I mean, I think he's a really fascinating character and he's got a lot of things that you can talk about, but it's just a matter of, you know, how do you fit it into 40-minute episodes of which you need to make 27.
Right.
Where you don't have enough time to, you know, write the screenplay to Blade Runner.
Right.
You just have to kind of like, well, I don't know. What does he do here? I don't know. That'd be kind of interesting, but we also need to do this and this, this, and then we should probably put a kid in there too. And well, Patrick Stewart wants to direct it. So blah, blah, blah.
Right. Yeah. We need time for close-ups here. I think I agree. I mean, Data is my favorite character on the show. Just from a writing standpoint, I think he has the most sort of symbolically interesting episodes. So I don't know if the idea, I think there's space to take the character. This one sort of feels not as good and a bit of a retread of what we've already seen about him in a not particularly interesting way. They could have done something by inverting it, you know, making it a little bit odder or something like that, but they don't really do that. So they end up with a pretty middling episode. So what'd you think of this one on our scale of 1 to 5? What are you going to give this bad boy?
2, probably.
2, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's tough because I usually give 3s to ones that I think are fine and, you know, not spectacular, but, you know, perfectly fine. And this one is, I don't know, this one's just a snoozer for me. This is not quite a 3, so I would say this is probably a 2 for me.
Sure. I'm gonna give it a 3. I'll give it the 3 you were hesitant to give it. It is a snoozer. I don't think there's like a super flaw to it where I'm just, I think
not that, really.
I think everything's just a little bit not great in the end. And it just kind of middles out.
It feels like a great writer's room, like at the beginning of the season when they go off and everybody brings their ideas and, you know, writes them in one sentence note cards.
Yep.
This sounds like a great one of those.
It does, yeah.
You know, but then it's like, oh, well, you actually have to write that. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a case of a decent concept, not a great execution, which is better, I suppose, than the other way around. Right. So, well, I don't know if that's tough. If I'd rather have a stupid idea that's executed very wonderfully.
I'm going to say I would prefer that.
Yeah, I think so. It's certainly less frustrating when the end result, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys for listening.
Do you want to read those iTunes reviews?
I will. Yeah, we got a couple. Thank you. I got a couple iTunes reviews, but so if you guys enjoyed the content today, if you're on YouTube, a like and a comment's appreciated. If you're on iTunes, a rating and review helps get the show out there. And we got a couple iTunes reviews. I thought I'd read them because I appreciate people leading them. Here, let me open up this. So everyone used a sort of pseudonym, so I feel comfortable saying this. I got BJ121285, which is, how do you remember that?
That guy?
That guy. Well, maybe it's a 12-12-85, which might make sense. But that number seems like that 0100 episode from the first season. He says, love the podcast. It's hilarious, especially when Clay and Sean are guests. Oh, he gives us 5 stars. Thank you very much, BJ121285. We appreciate it. I think Clay and Sean are a little overrated, but we'll leave it at that.
Wait, he said Clay and Sean? He said I zoned out after he said Clay.
you popped your champagne bottle and you didn't hear the second part of that one. The second one is from Vermont Trekkie. He says he gave us 5 stars. He says, enjoyable, insightful podcast. I've been enjoying this podcast for a long time and finally leaving a review. If the podcasters see this, I'm sorry it took so long. Very enjoyable takes on TNG, often pointing out things that I missed the first 5,000 times I saw each episode, and only occasionally failing to make the points most important to my thinking. This amounts to a listening experience that feels like discussing the show with Trekkie friends. I'd love to see the same folks take on Deep Space Nine when they're done with TNG. Thank you very much, Vermont Trekkie.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Senator Sanders.
Yeah, it's either Senator Sanders or one of the other three people that live in Vermont. So we appreciate your feedback, Senator. I'm sorry you're not getting the delegate counts that you feel you probably should get. Anyway, guys, thank you very much for leaving the feedback on iTunes. We appreciate it. Helps to get the show out there. I'll read them if they come in, if you'd like. So there's always that. Leave it in the thing if you don't want it read. But I appreciate the feedback. It means a lot to me. The show is going well as we wrap towards the middle of season 5. And I think we have a lot of great episodes coming up. Anyway, Clay, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. I mean, you know, I seem to be the highlight of the show, yeah. So I guess I'll be coming back.
That's right. I have to sort of customize my podcast guest list, I guess, depending on who people enjoy, which is terrible, and I would never actually do that. And I've actually made contact with another Star Trek podcast that might be coming on soon. That's at a Trek About that might come on for an episode. But look forward to that. And guys, thank you very much for listening. See you later.